From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last year when three local villages made the switch to solar. Brockport, Lima, Sodus Point, all working with the local company Green Spark Solar to install solar arrays. The projects all went live in December, and Green Spark says they could help residents see a cost savings of eventually hundreds of thousands of dollars over decades. The villages say they started saving money immediately. Could this inspire other local municipalities, towns, villages to make the switch to solar? What's the cost up front? What do residents start seeing on their utility bills? Those are questions our guests probably get a lot. We're going to talk about who benefits, how it happens, and more as we talk about carbon footprint, mitigating climate change, switching to solar. Kevin Schulte is the CEO of Green Spark Solar, involved in all three of these projects. That's correct?
Sure, yeah.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is the mayor of the village of Brockport. Margie Blackman is here. Mayor Blackman, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Hello to Maxine Appleby, a trustee and energy commissioner for the village of Sodus Point. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And John Waddick is a trustee of the village of Lima and a professor of engineering science and physics at MCC. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
A coup for Green Spark Solar. How'd you pull this off, Kevin? You're persuasive.
No, I don't think that's true. I actually think that all three of these municipalities reached out to us. And I think it takes great leadership from our municipal communities to see the opportunity in solar. Particularly pleased to have worked with female leadership here locally, which we don't see all that often with our customers. Not to say anything negative about John, but it's really exciting that that happened. But they reached out to us and said, what can we do? And Margie had been on a really long path towards solar. Maxine and Sodus Point, it was really quick. You called us and we had an opportunity and we made it happen. And John similarly was on a longer path where it took a little bit while to get them done. But we got all these villages now as close to 100% solar powered as we can.
So Kevin can keep us updated as to what that process has looked like and how fast the rollout can be. But I want to start with Mayor Blackman, because as Kevin mentioned, this process for you goes back years ago. Tell me about the process for you.
It goes back to 2015 when we heard that the town of Williamson in Wayne County had gone to municipal solar. A couple of us, one of myself and a couple of trustees, decided we'd take a trip out there and have a look at their solar array. And we immediately said, we've got to do this.
How big was it?
I think it's a little bit bigger than ours. I think it's two megawatts, maybe?
1.5 megawatts.
1.5 megawatts in Brockport or in Williamson?
In Williamson, yeah. Which is about double the size of the Brockport array.
About three quarters of a watt. Okay.
But similarly on a capped landfill.
And how big of an actual space is that? Physical space.
7 acres and 4 acres.
4 acres in Brockport. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, and I think Williamson was one of the first two towns in New York State to go to municipal solar. So we were excited. We talked it up. We met with an engineering company, and they said, great, you know, we'll find a solar company for you. So they put out the RFP for it. We got hooked up with another solar company, a large company, and we started in 2016. And the project ended up not getting finished because they didn't meet the deadline. It went to the Public Service Commission, where it languished for about 8 months. And they had requested a change so that the municipalities might be the ones to extend the deadline. The Public Service Commission said, no, we were done. And we had an employee at GreenSpark who grew up in Brockport and has always wanted to bring solar to his hometown, reached out to him, and that's how we got connected with GreenSpark. And it took, that was in 2018 after the other project went dead, and we went live on December 31st, 2019.
So 2018, you make the outreach, and by the end of 2019, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
What did your residents in town say about this?
We are strictly municipal solar, so we are powering our streetlights, our village,
sure,
our village buildings.
But
also,
any complaints?
No. The way we promoted it too was interesting because certainly those of us who were interested in it were certainly interested in it because of green energy, renewable, all these wonderful things. We really promoted it to the villages that we're doing this. We want to save you money because we're a very high tax village because we have a lot of tax exempt property.
And that's an easier sell.
That's a much easier sell.
It's almost, Kevin Schulte, like the economic sell works better with this stuff.
Yeah, we've always talked about it, right? Or I've always talked about it.
I know, I'm joking because that's been your message.
But I think what's really the story of Brockport that's amazing is what it takes to get these things done. What we would call all three of these human beings is project champions, right? All of them work in the municipal government, but Margie mentioned our employee, which is Solar Sean Lesord, who's been in this business for 20 years in this town, and he's a citizen champion. And it is the convergence of those.
What is his name?
Solar Sean Lesord.
Solar?
Sean Lesord, yes.
Solar Sean.
Yep. He's owned three different solar businesses in Rochester. He's been doing it for over 20 years. He's an amazing guy. He's a citizen of Brockport. He brought it from the citizen side and Margie from the government side. They met in the middle and made something happen. And that really is a common theme and a common story that we hear when we have municipal and school district and other public customers.
Kevin, I think this is like the debate a lot of homeowners are having, looking at interest rates, going, do I refinance the mortgage right now? Do I pay more up front? And will I get the savings over time that offset that? I mean, that's kind of the economic equation, isn't it?
The economic equation for all three of these customers is, am I willing to save money over the next 20 to 25 years? And am I willing to commit to understanding that solar offers us that opportunity? There was $0 out of pocket by any of these three communities. All three of them were given long-term contracts to save them money against their electric bills for 20 to 25 years.
Zero money out of pocket?
Zero money. Well, I would say the only money out of pocket probably was any legal fees and, with regard to the land or with regard to negotiating contracts and things like that. But other than that, no money out of pocket.
But it's not magic. So what are they paying GreenSpark overall? What's your cut?
Well, we make a standard margin as a contractor and a developer of a project.
But nothing up front. There's not like a $5,000, $10,000, $25,000 upfront cost.
No, we don't take any money from our partners because there's a commitment. So our business takes the risk on developing these projects through to the point where we can bring an investor in to own them. So the investor in the case of all three of these projects is a group called Kendall Sustainable Infrastructure, which is a infrastructure fund out of Cambridge, Massachusetts that we've done, close to 10 projects with. We'll do another 10 with this year. And so once we get to the point where a project has its permits and its off-taker or the group to purchase the power and the designs are done, et cetera, then they come in and they buy the project from us, and then we start to make money as a contractor and a developer.
4 acres, did you have to find a suitable site?
Oh, we had a great site, and I think there's solar companies all over that are looking for the same sites and using Google Maps to do it. We have a covered landfill in the village of Brockport. Nothing else can go on it. Perfect place to put solar, hidden back off from the road.
So you can't see it?
Mm-mm.
See, I like these things. I think they look awesome. I realize some people debate that. I don't get it. I think solar arrays always look cool. Is that kind of weird to you, Kevin Schulte, working in solar, that people are even debating the aesthetics?
We ought to get them on your house since you like looking at them so much. But other than that, yeah.
Always be closing.
the challenge is one of perception, right? So it's not one that I spend a lot of time focusing on, because certain people are going to like to look at certain things and others aren't. And so it is challenging for me to think that these are uglier than some of the other things in our landscape. I like you, think they are quite a friendly member of the landscape.
I do too. All right. So looking at the savings, here's the number I have from the mayor, but let's talk about this. First year of operation is going to see $15,000 of savings.
Mm-hmm.
That's what
GreenSpark told us.
Has that been accurate? I mean, like you're just a few months in here.
I'll tell you what happened. We've gotten two, not bills, but two from National Grid, two statements of solar credits, and it's been quite amazing. They've added up to, for this is from December 31st to the end of February. They added up to over $3,700, and I was thinking, wow, this sounds like a lot more. And then I called GreenSpark, talked to Matt Vanderbrook, and I said, do we have to pay the developer here? Yes, we do. So we owe the developer, and after the developer's paid, the estimate is that we'll get about $15,000 a year.
A year on that?
Yeah. $300,000 total, I think it was.
Is that pretty common, Kevin Schulte?
For the project of this size?
Yeah.
So yes, the I believe that represents roughly a 10% savings for Brockport in its first year on their electric bill. So they're saving 10% off their existing electric cost to be a solar customer.
And I'm thinking of the Bill Murray line in Ghostbusters where he's talking to Ray, trying to figure out everything's happening. He says, just for a moment, let's pretend I don't know anything about energy, solar arrays, and tell me this array, how does the energy get into the grid and how do you use it?
Yeah, really simply, we set a new pole at the Brockport landfill that connects our solar project to the grid. At that pole, all of the kilowatt hours of solar that we are producing are turned into a cash payment that goes against all of Brockport's bills. So if they pay $100,000 a month in electricity, we are going to send them a bill for $90,000 against the solar credits that they made. So they save that 10%. So really simply, the kilowatt hour goes out onto the grid and shows up as a cash payment or a reduction in the cost with, in Brockport's case, National Grid on your bill.
I'm always trying to figure out what's the best argument against something, Mark, because we talked about community choice aggregation, the most boring term in sexy energy politics earlier this week. But I'm trying to figure out, really, what's the argument against this? Who was arguing for years against it? Did anybody argue against this?
Well, I think some of the arguments have been in other places have been the aesthetic arguments, particularly when you see these enormous solar arrays in farm fields. But we happen to think this one's particularly beautiful, even if it's on a landfill. And Solar Sean, who's a very good photographer, can make any solar array look absolutely beautiful. It might be different if we were talking community solar. There might be some skepticism about that, but I haven't heard any concerns. People are going to be saving money. Fire district's going to be saving money. The library's going to be saving money in addition to the village.
All right, Maxine Appleby, you want to jump in here from the Village of Sodus?
I think there are concerns that prime agriculture is mm-hmm. being taken. Those are the concerns that we certainly have heard, and I'm sure you've heard it too.
Well, this is a good segue. Let's talk about your project then.
Well, our project, we have
Sodus
great,
Point.
We have a great project in Sodus Point, and it actually was quite easy for us to get started.
How long was this in the making?
Pretty quick. Greenspark had another municipality that they were working with, and that municipality couldn't come to a decision. So at the same time, we are participating in the Green Energy Communities Program, which is part of NYSERDA, and we really needed this portion to fulfill our obligation as far as that program so that we could become a certified community. And we've been looking at ways that we could cut back, and our municipal sewer department is really where we're applying this these credits to. That's one of our highest uses. So in all, it only took us about, 10 months to get started.
Not even. Yeah. So we signed an agreement with the Village of Sodus Point in July, and the project was turned on December 31st.
There you go. It's pretty quick.
End of the year. So you've been doing it really since January 1, and now, again, it looks like a similar size project to Brockport.
It's the same size. The biggest difference is Brockport takes 100% of the electricity and credits from the solar project in Brockport. Maxine's project is actually a community solar array where 60% of the power goes to local residents here in the greater Rochester area, and 40% is used to fulfill the municipal loads in the Village of Sodus Point.
And we should be saving about $8,500 a year. And we're still looking for our solar credits. We don't have that quite worked out. I looked on the last bill that came in. So we'll have to work with Matt over at Greenspark to take a look at that. But we're pretty excited. It is, just like your project, it's not visible from the road. We're excited about in an attempt to address some of the concerns that we had from the agriculture community, Greenspark is going to be planting pollinators pollinator plants so that it not only holds the soil, but it also contributes to the pollination in the surrounding agricultural fields in Wayne County. So we're very excited about that.
The complaints again from the farming community.
Well, I mean, this is prime agricultural land. Maybe not necessarily the location that our solar farm is on, but I think that's what we hear more than anything. I'm sure you attend a lot of the conferences that I attend talking about solar, but that's what a lot of the zoning and planning boards hear, is that we're taking this land that could be used for agriculture in the future, and we're tying it up for 20 to 30 years.
Okay. Kevin Schulte, when you hear some of those concerns from the agricultural community, how do you deal with that?
We deal with it in two ways, and actually I'll address two questions that have been asked. One is the visual question,
sure.
Right? All three of these projects are basically invisible to the public. The way that we develop, and we're a local company, we consider ourselves stewards to our community and stewards to the agricultural community, stewards to public health and all of these sort of things that are, you know, assets to our community. And so one of the things that we always work with our farmers on is to find the least valuable ag land on their property in order to develop this. So on Maxine's project, as a for instance, we are nearly 1,000 feet from one road and tucked in behind a hedgerow on the other in a part of the property that is very poorly drained. And I can attest to that because on December 31st, when I was out there, because we had so many of these going on, I was actually out there helping to get this thing wired up and turned on, and I was in mud up to my knees. And so we're literally taking this property owned by a gentleman named Homer Wang and leased by a local farmer from him, and the property drains to this. And so he said, I can't grow anything in that corner, so put the solar over there. And so we did, whereas it would have been more advantageous to us from a cost perspective to put it right up on the road frontage. And so we're doing those things to make sure that we're protecting the farmers and protecting the community from whether it's a visibility concern or, you know, prime soils concern. But the question on prime soils is an interesting one, because I don't believe that the maps of prime soils generated by New York State Ag and Markets marries up very well with what are farmers in our area actually believe are prime soils. And so we have this sort of discrepancy between the sort of public sphere and what's going on the ground, because both in the case of this project and another project we did in the town of Huron last year, the projects are considered prime soils. However, neither of the farmers can actually get anything to grow on those particular fields because of other challenges related to those properties. And so we worked with them to find a property that was less valuable to them rather than going on their more valuable farmland where they can make their living. So.
Okay. And all things considered, Maxine, do you feel like there's been sort of a meeting of the minds with those who might have been concerned at first? How's the community reception been to this project?
Well, I think overall the community is very receptive to saving money. I mean, that's our goal, is to cut the cost of the municipality any way we can so we can keep our taxes down. I mean, don't forget the governor has a initiative going that he wants everyone to be 80% by the year 2030. So we are also trying to meet that goal. But we would like to see our community, in our agreement with GreenSpark, we asked them if they could come back and do some workshops with our community members to offer them solar as well. For this particular project, it was too late. They had already had commitments, and so they were full. So we're hoping for another project that we could offer to our community residents.
Again, how much are you saving? Because you're splitting it up with community solar. 40% is to the municipality, 60% for community solar. Is that right, Kevin?
Correct.
Okay, so how much are you saving?
We should save about $8,500 this year, and that's directly off of our sewer plant. which is one of our highest energy consumption sites.
Okay. So it turns out, as much as the governor's plan, for the 2030 plan, the goals we have for renewable and new forms of energy are admirable. Turns out, Kevin Schulte, when you work with municipalities, the first thing that gets you in the door is if it cuts the bills.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure that's true.
That's what I'm hearing here.
I think that's what gets it over the finish line. That's okay. What makes it universally accepted. That's why neither Margie nor Maxine had competition or, you know, any kind of a deep argument from their communities to get it done. Because if either of them had gone to their communities and said, we're just going to do this to go green and it's level on cost or higher on cost, they would have been rebuffed by their community. And the fact that it was cheaper than they're currently paying helps to get it over the finish line. But I don't believe it necessarily brought either of these people to the starting gate.
Maxine?
I think it's helpful to have the clean energy communities. Margie, you're mm-hmm. a clean energy community.
Yes, we are too.
Correct?
Climate, so, yes, we are.
Yes, and so there are a lot of grants that NYSERDA offers that when you take a look at the whole picture, okay,
because... By the way, listeners always ask me to clarify, what's NYSERDA when we do the alphabet soup? NYSERDA?
You're asking.
New York State Energy Research and Development Authority.
There you go. Okay. New York State Research and Development Authority.
Okay.
So they offer a lot of credits. And when you take a look at the big picture, because when you start investing in other types of renewables, it can be expensive. But you have to look at the 25 to 30-year return on your investment, okay? When you start to look at taking your incandescents or fluorescents and in your all of your municipal buildings and then turning them into LEDs, which is the new technology right now, sometimes your investment, your payback is 8 to 10 years. But the great thing is that this program, this clean energy communities program, you can get rebates along the way. So it can help offset some of the costs. So that's a really good incentive, I know, at least for our community. Do you feel the same way?
Yes, ours too. We have an electric car for our code enforcement officer. So that was one of the things we invested in. We've got two electric charging stations. We'd like to put in more.
Right. We have two electric charging stations, so we just received our rebates. So it was $4,000 per charging station. And again, when you look at the big picture, it offsets a lot of the other projects that you're going to be doing to save money long term.
So to me, Kevin Schulte, in a moment here, we're going to hear about Lima's experience with this too. Listeners may be thinking about what's happening in their own communities. To me, this goes back to the conversations we've had about how you get people to make change when it comes to a lot of different things, but their daily lives. Now, these are municipalities, not individuals. But if you didn't have the economic incentives, I don't know if you'd be getting the work. And that's the thing. People want to do what is, quote unquote, the right thing or the better thing for the environmental gain or for dealing with climate change. But sector after sector, it does look to me like we have reached a point where it's also a better financial, economic investment idea, too. And if that's the case, then we should really start to see change. What do you think?
Yeah, we think our business is going to grow dramatically over the next 2 to 3 years because we have, in our opinion, reached that tipping point to where we can offer this type of investment or this type of savings to municipalities, school districts, and other institutions anywhere in Western New York.
Let me get a phone call from John, who's got a question for our listeners. Go ahead, John. For our panelists, I should say. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah, I read an article going back a couple of years ago, and I heard one of the SOTUS people talk about the Williamson solar array. And I read an article in the DNC, I think it was, and they talked about the cost of putting up this solar array was about, I think, $2.2 million, and it was subsidized by about $1.5 million, $1.5 million. So the actual out-of-pocket expense, at least according to this article, would be $700,000. Can you address that question? Are the subsidies, in that case, it amounted to about 75% of the cost was subsidized. Has that come down, or is that an oddball? Maybe the Greenspark gentleman can talk about that.
John, thanks. Go ahead, Kevin.
So we installed the Williamson Array in 2014, and every level of economics of solar was different 6 years ago than it is today. The cost of that project was over $3 million. I don't remember the grant numbers off the top of my head, but yes, the project was the benefactor of both federal and New York State programs to incentivize the adoption of clean energy. But I always like to remind anyone asking this sort of question that if we were to remove government influence in the energy business nationally, you would pay at least double what you're paying per kilowatt hour at your home. You would be paying double what you pay for a gallon of gasoline or for a decatherm of natural gas. And so it's really important to understand that in the world we live in, which is a subsidized energy world on every level, nuclear, coal, natural gas, even hydropower, as well as renewables, that these incentives are there to level the playing field so that the cheapest and best products get to market.
Well, so you're saying the renewables don't get much more subsidies than, let's say, natural gas?
I'm saying we get less.
You get less subsidies than natural gas producers?
Correct.
Wow. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Go ahead, Maxine.
I just want to say something about just renewables in general and just what our communities look like. I mean, as it is a feel good for... It's a better quality of life in general. So if you're looking from the outside and you're looking to move into Brockport or you're looking to move into Lima or Sodus Point and you look at them and you go, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. They care about the environment. That's a community that they've got great parks. They, you know, it's all part of the quality of life. They've got electric charging stations. They've got electric vehicles. I want to be a part of that community. So sometimes you have to take that into consideration as well. I think that's a big plus.
Let me grab one more quick phone call, and then we're going to hear Lima's story on this. But Jim in Rochester wants to jump in too. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi. So I've got some experience in this industry, and one of the frustrating things to me is to see these economic incentives, if you will, to do these sorts of things. I remember I did a NYSERDA training program, and the impetus behind that was energy efficiency and so forth. And there were a number of companies around at the time that were coming out and doing assessments on insulation on people's homes. And if you subscribe to this or one of those company services to insulate your home, they would provide some subsidy. Oh, actually, NYSERDA would provide subsidy, and these guys would come in and give you some discount off the work. The difference was that in this particular case, and I could cite some others if you were interested, cellulose insulation was at X dollars a square or cubic foot of installation. And we know that as a standard across the country, because if you look at insurance-related estimating software, you can calculate anywhere, any area code in the country, the cost of prevailing labor and materials to install a cubic foot of cellulose insulation. The point here is that what happened in New York was when you had a cubic foot of cellulose insulation that used to be X, it's now 2X because of this program, and then all of a sudden these guys are providing an incentive that's really not an incentive at all. So it does not compete with what's actually in the marketplace. And then when that program goes away, you're left with insulation, among other things. Again, I could cite other examples that are 2X or more what they were the day before this program started.
Okay.
It's an interesting question and point. I'll think back to, you know, the early part of the 20th century when we started to subsidize oil and coal for transport and electricity in the United States. And we did that because we wanted, as a country, we wanted to take the costs of, now that we have this electricity and we have the ability to move people and goods around society, we wanted to make that an affordable thing to do. And so as the economy moves forward, as the country moves forward, as the world moves forward, and those sources of energy have found to have extraneous other costs, whether it be public health, carbon, climate change, et cetera, we have to now bring along the technologies that will replace them. And so as we do that, we will incentivize them. And for what it's worth, those subsidies that were given in the early part of the 20th century are still in place today to subsidize fossil energy, nuclear, et cetera. And so there is now just coming to this level playing field where it is possible for Brockport or Lima or Sodus Point to get solar at or below the cost of buying those otherwise subsidized conventional energies. And so the only other point I would make to you on it is the cost of solar energy in the 6 years since we did Williamson until we did these three projects last year, the cost has dropped by about 40%. And so that in the last 6 years, our cost to install these projects has dropped dramatically, which means that those incentives are actually doing the societal purpose, which is to make these technologies more cost effective so that they don't need those programs forever.
All right, Jim, thank you. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to John Waddick, who's a trustee at the Village of Lima and a professor of engineering and science and physics at MCC, about what Lima is doing. You've heard the stories from the Village of Brockport, from Mayor Margie Blackman, Maxine Appleby, a trustee and energy commissioner for the Village of Sodus Point. They're working with a company called Green Spark Solar, and their CEO, Kevin Schulte, is here, and they've made some significant decisions about going solar in their communities, and we're finding out why and what it means for them, the people who live there, tax bills, and more. It's coming up next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, Friday on The Next Connections, with experts recommending social distancing as the only and best way to contain the coronavirus. Vulnerable populations, including the elderly and immunocompromised, might be staying in their homes for the foreseeable future. What can we do to prevent loneliness and help them stay connected and included in society? We're joined by mental health experts who can answer your questions Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So you've heard about the solar array projects in Brockport and in Sodus Point. In Lima, let me turn to John Waddick, who is a trustee of the Village of Lima. The project is about 450 kilowatt hours. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. What's the process here? How did this all get going?
Well, it was part of our Green Energy Community Program that Maxine talked about before with NYSERDA, the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. Obviously, I have a passion for trying to bring green to Lima, but Lima is actually a red community. Okay, so not everybody there is on board with being motivated by climate change. But what they are motivated by is what all people are motivated by, are good economics. So I'd say, as I proposed this project, I never said anything about saving the planet. I just talked about spreadsheets and how that would get them to save you money over time.
Would you have turned people out? Would you have turned people off if you talked about saving the planet?
Yes, probably. So when the proposal was not whether we're going to save the planet or not, or whether we're going to be able to save money on our utility bill by having no money down. We can bring in a $750,000 solar array to Lima at zero money down and save money over time. You'd have to be an idiot not to take that proposition. Now, why would there ever be reticence? It's because a lot of people that are in our realm of public service are afraid and are just frozen by the possibility that they could make a mistake, okay? That this doesn't actually work out, that it sounded too good to be true, and maybe it is, and over time this is going to end up costing us. But we have a long-term contract. For 25 years, Village of Lima has a locked-in price for our electrical energy off the array. And even in year one, that's going to turn a savings or profit for us. So if anybody's thinking in 25 years, the cost of electricity off the grid isn't going to go up, They're crazy, right, Kevin? But Lima, for 25 years, we've got 8 cents a kilowatt hour.
What do you expect to see in terms of savings this year? What do you expect over the 25 years?
Well, we had different choices as to how we would get into the purchasing agreement. You know, you can come in and pay a low price, and then it escalates over time, and that could increase your initial savings. We chose to go with the fixed price, so ours is going to be much more modest, and our array is much smaller. So you're probably talking on the terms of a few thousand, maybe, or, you know, I don't know. Kevin, do you want to?
John and Lima gave up higher short-term savings by taking a higher rate with no escalation for 25 years. So the Village of Lima has 8 cents a kilowatt hour power for 25 years, no matter what happens in the market. I don't believe many of us think that that is going to go down. So their savings is smallest now and grows over time. I believe both Asotas Point is got a little escalator and Brockport has a little escalator on it. So their goes up, but they're designed to go up significantly less than the inflation of the cost of energy.
Okay. And you feel pretty good about that choice there, John, the fix for 25.
Yeah, you know, the easy thing in politics, Evan, is to make the good short-term choice, make myself look good. But those folks that will be on the village board in 25 years are going to be thanking somebody who's maybe not even on the planet anymore.
Well, come on, man. Cool. But
can I make a point? So I've been in renewable energy for over 20 years, and I have always desired to get municipalities to commit to the long-term hedge against the volatility of the energy markets. And the Village of Lima is the first one to commit to a 0% escalator for exactly the reason that John said. Like, I'm okay with giving up a little this year because I know that this gets demonstrably better over time. And we've always thought that was an excellent opportunity, but few have been bold enough to take that, and we're grateful to work with Lima in that way.
8 cents a kilowatt hour, right?
Yes.
What would be the price be if you didn't do the solar array?
Okay, so this is how it works. So our power goes out onto the grid. National Grid gives us, depending on the time of year, there's a big complex formula. Kevin's familiar with it. But we're banking on a little bit more than 8 cents a kilowatt hour, maybe 8.3 cents a kilowatt hour or so over the course of the year. So there'll be a very small margin at the beginning of maybe a few tenths of a cent per kilowatt hour over the course of the year. So we're not going to have big savings now, but with that locked-in price. So we're expecting that our reimbursement rate off a National Grid is going to increase over time, and that what we have to pay to the developer, KSI, is going to be flat from here on out.
Okay.
But we're not losing money in year one. So.
Now, you said you were careful, John, not to bring up saving the planet, climate change, not all that popular issues in politically in the area where you live or where you're from. And so you focused on the economics. What has the public response been anyway? Has there been some pushback?
No real pushback. I mean, if you go on Facebook and you always have negative people that say things
don't
like,
read the comments, man.
That seems like, you know, we don't need no solar. But, you know, you need savings. And some of the people that are saying that are, you know, they're not taking a long-term view of things. So
all right, well, let's apply the lesson from last hour. So we had Joel Stein, the author of the book In Defense of Elitism. He's talked about how he's sort of an NPR elite liberal, but he wanted to understand people, truly understand, and spent a lot of time in deeply red counties and basically said, look, these are good people. They want good things, just like I want good things. We have different sort of sets of values or ways of seeing the world, but that doesn't mean that they're not informed at all, et cetera. So what do you think is motivating the suspicion about solar, to the extent there's suspicion?
I am labeled as one of Lima's elitists, okay?
You're used to that.
You know, I live in a 1,600-square-foot, pretty modest ranch house, okay? But the economics are there. The environment is there. The solar array looks good, and I might add, you can barely see it, but GreenSpark, they don't cut corners, I'll tell you what.
Now, you're making the argument for it. What do you think animates the suspicion of it? Why do you think they're concerned?
Well, it probably comes from a guy who Twitters all the time. and says it's a hoax and this is some kind of, you know, conspiracy or something, that coal is good. I dig coal. There's something, I don't know, macho about burning solar or fossil fuels, and there's something kind of feminine about going green. I don't know.
Okay, so the bottom line is you've decided, though, to focus on, look, forget all that stuff. You're going to save money.
Yeah, in any board meeting, Evan, I haven't said one word about the environment.
That is so interesting. And by the way, Kevin Schulte, do you feel like a soothsayer now after our previous conversations about this subject?
I wrote the paper. So Evan and I talked about a paper that I wrote where it's time to take ethics and morality out of the climate change conversation because it turns people off.
Right.
And my belief is that we are at the tipping point of being able to speak to the economics. And so you're helping make my case, but I wrote the paper because of people like John, because of people like Margie, where they both believe in it, but they took it to their community because it was the right thing to do financially and economically.
Yeah, very interesting. So you want to endorse Kevin's paper where he says you got to take the ethics and morality out of it. We've spent a decade plus in that field. Most people who can be convinced on those grounds have been convinced. Now you got to pull people in with the economics. Do you agree?
Yeah, nobody wants to be told to eat their vegetables. So that's the way I look at it.
In a small municipality, it's all about economics.
Yeah, very interesting.
I quite agree.
Let me get Jeff in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, I put some solar panels up on my house about 6 or 8 years ago, about $42,000. The government paid about $30,000 of it, and I'll never see a profit from that. But that's not my issue. My issue is, on the one hand, you have some a New York State organization like NYSERDA working to go solar, and on the other hand, you have New York State Power Authority, which has people out in Fairport and Churchville heating their houses with electricity that's generated from the hydroelectric in New York, and wasting that, really, because all we have to do is generate more electricity to replace that electricity generated through burning fossil fuels, where only about 30% of that fossil fuel energy goes into the electricity BTUs. So I just want to make clear that just because the government is doing it doesn't make it ethical or right. And I have real questions as to whether there are subsidies in here from people other than Lima that are making it reasonable to do this. Thank you.
Jeff, thank you. Thoughts there?
Well, you know, like with anything, if, you know, I'm not going to apologize for Lima going out and being aggressive and taking what's out there and available and to benefit my residents. I don't know what the overall state economics are, but I know that we're doing right for our residents.
I agree. I'm not going to apologize for going out and finding resources to save money. We're doing this for our community.
Okay. You want to add to that, Kevin Schulte?
Well, I tend to like to stay away from Fairport Electric and the other MOUs, but the reality of the world is we're moving in the direction of electrification. So if you have gas heat in your home now, that's probably not forever. And so in Fairport, where electricity is really cheap because their power is an all-source contract with New York Power Authority, where they get their power functionally from Niagara Falls, so they pay half of what the surrounding areas pay for their electricity, I would heat with electricity too. And by the way, that electricity is 100% green. There's no carbon. So just because it's gas and it's lower carbon than oil doesn't mean it's no carbon. And no carbon is where we need to head.
Okay. Mayor Blackmun?
Yeah, thinking about one of the things that Maxine said, too, is I think that municipalities like ours go for any kind of grants and assistance that we can get that is going to benefit the public. I mean, we go for NYSERDA grants. We go for all kinds of grants. And I think both Maxine and I we mentioned during the break, we're also trying to buy back our streetlights, which will
Lima
save.
Too.
Yeah, we're all going LED. So I think the three of us, we all participate in similar programs. And so the Village of Sodus Point is going through a streetlight buyout, and we're working with New York Power Authority right now to transition over to LEDs. It's very complicated process, much more complicated than it has been.
And it's
working.
Long. We have been trying to buy back, and well, we've already signed the
yes.
purchase agreement with National Grid to buy back our streetlights. We started in 2016. We'll be lucky if we get it done by the end of December.
We started in 2016 as well, and back and forth. Just saw today on the Public Service Commission website that it looks like the DEC finalized their seeker, and we should be close. But it's not easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell me if I'm wrong. The switch from existing streetlights to LED saves 90% of the electricity associated with your street lighting district?
We will have a positive cash flow from day one.
Let me try to squeeze in as much feedback. We got a lot of questions. Matthew in Mendon. Go ahead, Matthew.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I don't have the opportunity to sign up for a community solar arrangement, but I would like to maximize the amount of solar energy, renewable energy I'm using. I'm getting a lot of flyers in the mail and contacts from different companies. I think Assurion might be one, and I struggle to understand the contracts and the implications. Is this something I should move forward on if I'm not able to get community solar?
Well, Matthew, one of the things I'll recommend to you is you should attend the Honey I Falls Village Board meeting on Monday at 7 p.m., and they're going to be talking about a community solar project there. I realize that maybe you're outside of the confines of the village of Honey I Falls, but, you know, you're part of the same town. So they're going to be looking at some ways of bringing in community solar where residents would not have to have solar panels on their roofs. And Lima is also very much involved in that as well.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Does that help?
Do you know? It does. I wonder if anyone knows anything about some of these outside businesses that are trying to sign up customers, and they're supposed to get credits for the number of people that sign up, but they don't necessarily get. It's confusing for me, and I don't understand.
I know in Brockport, a lot of our residents have been getting flyers from Arcadia is one of them, offering people to sign up, saying you will save about, for community solar, you'll save about 10% on your electric bill, which seems to be the standard number and the number that the Public Service Commission has approved. But they are, I believe, just like other ESCOs. And one of the things that will happen with that is that you'd be getting two bills. And I know that in the case of Brockport, that's not something that people want to put up with, getting two separate bills for their electric. We, too, are exploring community solar. Would love to do it with GreenSpark. And we hope that it can happen, because I think also, if I'm not mistaken, if the Public Service Commission has approved this in National Grid territory, after July 1st, they will approve or are approving consolidated billing, which would be fantastic. You get one bill, in this case, from National Grid, and it takes care, does with all those solar credits, just applies them directly to your bill.
And I would just suggest there are a lot of options related to getting into solar, community, residential, et cetera. Please reach out to us on our webpage, and we'd be happy to walk you through your options.
Mark wants to know, Avon has a solar installation near its school campus, and a new one is under construction nearby in Caledonia. Are your guests familiar? Are these projects related to the same program?
The Avon project is pretty old now. It's actually right around the same time as the Williamson project. I'm not sure how that was financially structured, but I know there's been some trouble along the way at Avon. The Caledonia one is a utility scale project, so that is much, much larger than anything we're speaking about here. Still a great project, still valuable from a number of perspectives, but very different from what we're speaking about.
And Kevin Willem in Greece says 85% of all global subsidies go to the fuel industries, so he doesn't think there's a serious effort to combat climate change yet. Do you agree with that? I don't know if that number is fully accurate. I haven't seen the source. I'm not necessarily questioning it. I just don't see the source, but go ahead.
I believe that the amount of money from governments worldwide that's going to the fossil fuel industry is dramatic and challenges our ability to get this work done.
I want to thank all of our guests for being here. Kevin Schulte is the CEO of GreenSpark Solar. Any other municipalities you're working with in the future? You want to break any news?
Not today, but we're working with a lot of them here locally.
Soon?
Yep. This year,
you think
soon?
Yep. Maxine Appleby is the trustee and energy commissioner for the Village of Sodus Point. Thanks for sharing the experience.
Thank you.
Nice having you here. John Waddock, a trustee of the Village of Lima and a professor of engineering science and physics at MCC. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks for having me.
And our thanks to the mayor of the Village of Brockport, Margie Blackman. Margie,
thank you
very much. Listeners, just want to mention all of the people involved with the program today. Josephine Perini is the volunteer. Rob Braden is the engineer. Emery Stein, our intern, doing work late into the night last night, helping us on coverage of the coronavirus. And producer Megan Mack, also. I don't think people in this community are fully aware of the amount of time and energy and nonstop she puts into this program and for WXXI News. I hope you appreciate local news right now. Local news in every corner of this country is vital to helping us stay informed, smart, calm, and prepared. And we're going to keep doing that. Thanks. I'm Evan Dawson. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.